And greetings, friends. Welcome to Tomorrow's World program, where we give you the plain truth about prophetic events and the real purpose of human existence. Does God exist? Can you prove to yourself that a real God actually exists? A divine personality with a supreme mind and total power who also intervenes in human affairs. Many of you out there don't believe in any kind of God. I know that. Some of you may simply be a non-Christian. But are there specific proofs that point to the definite existence of the God revealed in the Christian Bible, a real God? Are these proofs factual or just sentimental thoughts about a little Lord Jesus or that kind of thing? You need to know, and you can know. Stay tuned.
Tomorrow's World presents Roderick C. Meredith, Richard Ames, John O'Gwen, bringing you the good news of your future in tomorrow's world. This week, Roderick C. Meredith answers the question, does God exist? And now, Roderick C. Meredith.
My friends, can you really prove to yourself that a real personal God does exist and does intervene in human affairs? Over the last two centuries, belief in God has come under attack by many so-called intellectuals in the West, the children of the Enlightenment. The German philosopher Nietzsche asserted that, quote, God is a thought, end quote. Freud termed belief in God a form of mental disorder and said mankind will eventually grow out of it. Karl Marx termed religious belief, quote, the opium of the people, end quote. Atheist H.L. Mencken asserted, God is the immemorial refuge of the incompetent, the helpless, the miserable. Playwright Tennessee Williams described God as, quote, a senile delinquent, end quote. In the 1960s, prominent theologians echoed Nietzsche's earlier sentiments, and they actually asked, these theologians asked, is God dead? Is God really dead, my friends? As the young people used to say, let's get real, folks. Let's get real. Frankly, belief in a creator God is the most logical, the most sensible, and the most realistic concept a person could possibly have. Why? Is belief in a real God just based on sentiment, on emotion, on blind faith? No way. If you're willing to face facts realistically without the blind prejudice of the so-called intellectuals who in their arrogance try to think that they are God and they can prove that God doesn't exist, you can prove to yourself that a personal God really does exist and that he acts and intervenes in human affairs. In the words of the Bible, notice what the great God tells us. The 14th Psalm, verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. Yes, the great God who gave you life and breath, if you come to understand, the God who guides the course of events in the world, the God who's about to intervene in human history, that God says a person is a fool who does not believe in his existence. Let me now give you five reasons why I believe in a real God, not just a blind force or some kind of divine spark out in the universe. I believe in a spirit being who created the universe and made man in his image, a God who intervenes in the affairs of men and nations when he wants to, when it's his plan to do so. Here are the five major reasons why I believe in a real God. Number one, creation demands a creator. Number two, universal laws demand a lawgiver. Number three, the human mind and spirit must reflect a real God. Number four is fulfilled prophecy. The fifth reason is answered prayer. Let's discuss these five reasons why I believe in a real God and why, frankly, you should too. Number one, creation demands a creator. There is a law of science which says that life can only come from pre-existing life. It's a law that all scientists understand. It's called the law of biogenesis, and it has never been disproved, as hundreds of scientists acknowledge. In spite of over 100 years of trying, and they have tried, many ways they've tried, scientists still cannot bring into existence real life from dead matter. Think of the intricate design of your body, your eyes, your ears, your mind. What kind of person is he who thinks blind chance brought all these wondrous things into existence? Think about your own wristwatch, if you have one. I have one here. It's an inexpensive Seiko, but it really works. It's a good watch that keeps almost perfect time. What if I found this watch on a deserted beach or on some remote uninhabited island? Should I assume that this fine watch with its fine casing and its very complicated inner workings all just came together over a period of a billion years? Yes, they want to go a long time to make their theories work. Or let's try 10 billion. Or let's try 100 billion. The waves of the sea keep coming in. The sand is there, the sun, all these things, the elements, and somehow they all put this together. That is the kind of foolishness, my friends, which evolutionary scientists want us to believe about our own intricately complicated bodies. And as most of you know, scientists acknowledge that the human body is far more complicated and complex than any watch which has ever existed. It really is. Remember, creation demands a creator. Number two, universal laws demand a lawgiver. Any honest scientist will admit that there are literally dozens of natural laws. These are active principles that scientists rely on. These so-called laws are constant, they're reliable, and they are very necessary to keep the Earth and universe operating as they do. If these laws suddenly became like random chance, if they didn't work, then the Earth would be destroyed, and all human life would become extinct, and you and I wouldn't be here. These miraculously designed laws and principles certainly point to a supreme mind, a creator. For instance, there is the law of gravity. Without the consistent, reliable gravitational pull of the Earth, the suns, the planets, the stars upon each other, various suns and stars in the universe would collide, and we would all soon be dead. And the scientists acknowledge that. Think of the billions of stars and galaxies out there in the vast universe. On a clear night, the panoply of stars up there are absolutely beautiful. But all these stars and planets are guided in their constant rotation by natural laws. Who put these laws in motion? Who sustains these vital laws? Notice what King David was inspired to write. Again, turning to the Bible, which doesn't prove anything to you, you atheists out there, but it can help you think, and I hope you will think, because we're going to have to think as this great God begins to intervene in human affairs and bring things about in its consistent manner. Psalm 8, verse 3, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers," David wrote, "the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him?" Yes, the magnificent creation of God with its interlocking and overlapping and constant, consistent laws demand a great lawgiver. At this point, my friends, I invite you to call or write immediately for a free copy of an extremely helpful booklet entitled The Real God, Proofs and Promises. This well-documented booklet gives you much more information about the existence of a real God than I can give you on this brief program. So call or write today and request your free copy of this most helpful booklet entitled The Real God. Now back to our topic, five reasons why I believe in a real God. Remember, my friends, creation demands a creator. Universal laws demand a lawgiver. Now let's go to reason three. The human mind and spirit must reflect a real God. The human mind. When the great God created man, notice what he said. And I'm going to read here from the Bible, which doesn't again prove anything to you atheists out there. I know that. But it shows us something, and you need to think about it. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Yes, we're all created in the image of the great God. Man alone has creative imagination and real mind power like God himself. We not only are in the form and shape of God, but we have the kind of understanding. We have the kind of creative imagination. We have the ability to back off and even laugh at our own foibles. An animal doesn't do that. They cannot. No other creature under heaven has the capacity that man does. And we need to understand that and think about it. Think of the awesome capacity of the human mind. Think of the awesome capacity, for instance, of the newer computers used in business and science and in the military. Experts tell us that a single computer can pour out billions of pieces of information, not in an hour, not in a minute, but in a second. Billions of pieces of information. Who created these computers? Did mankind create these computers? Yes, they did. It was the mind of man that did this. And, my friends, let's think about it. Let's get real. Who created man's mind and gave us this incredible capacity? Did our minds just somehow get wound up all by themselves from the ocean slime? Did blind chance cause our minds to come about and give us this creative imagination? Wake up, you doubters. Think about things. Get real. There is an awesome creator who made the very mind with which you try to reason around God and which gives you, all of us, the capacity to understand even spiritual things if we're willing and to choose the good and resist the evil. The existence of the marvelous capacity of the human mind demands an even greater mind, the creator God, the real God. That is proof number three. Proof number four of God is fulfilled prophecy. Over and over, God's inspired word, the Holy Bible, has given us specific predictions of future events. I don't even begin to have the time to explain all of these here. I wish I did, but we have many booklets telling about them, as you know, that we advertise to you regularly, and they're all free. But these prophetic events always come to pass, or they are now coming to pass in some cases in our lifetimes. Only a supreme God who intervenes in human affairs could predict and bring about these specific prophecies. Consider, for instance, just one. Ancient Tyre was the New York of its time. It was big. It was rich. It was a powerful trading center. Situated on a peninsula with very high walls and parapets around it, Tyre was considered impregnable. But long before Tyre fell, God predicted how its fall would come about in specific detail. Ezekiel chapter 26, beginning in verse 2, Son of man, because Tyre has said against Jerusalem, aha, she is broken, who was the gateway of the peoples. Now she is turned over to me. I shall be filled. She is laid waste. God had a very special feeling about the city of Jerusalem, and frankly, he still does. But that's another matter. So God says, because Tyre was trying to hate Jerusalem and put her down, therefore, thus says the eternal God, behold, I am against you, O Tyre, and will cause many nations to come up against you as the sea causes its waves to come up. The destruction of Tyre was not to be all of a sudden by one nation. It was to be a series of invasions, a series of nations coming up like waves of the sea. And yes, they did. Long, long after Ezekiel was dead. They shall destroy the walls of Tyre, break down her towers. I will scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. It shall be a place for spreading nets in the midst of the sea. Yes, this prophecy was given, again, long before it happened. A whole series of nations did, in fact, begin to attack and tear down Tyre. And finally, over 250 years later, Alexander the Great invaded Tyre, conquered Tyre, and the battering that it had taken was finally finished under Alexander the Great about 332 B.C., some 250 years after the prophecy was written. Tyre was made nothing. It was made like the top of a rock, just like God said. God also gave numerous details hundreds of years in advance about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Only a real God could bring all these things about, my friends. Only a real God. And that's the fourth reason why I believe in a real God. And you should too. You really should. There is a God. And that understanding, if you come to believe this book, the Bible, his book, gives you real purpose in life. It gives you reason for being. It helps you understand what has happened, what will happen, and the whole meaning of human existence. The fifth reason as to why I believe in a real God is answered prayer. Of course, you skeptics will have to wait on this proof. I understand that. For you'll not get any answers to your prayers until you believe in the real God of the Bible. But most of you will eventually see, and you will know, once you truly believe in God and put him to the test. But listen, if you have an open mind, listen to a couple of personal examples, which I am very familiar with. Turn to James 5:14, first of all, for something that God says and God promises in his inspired word. In your New Testament, turn to the book of James, if you're following, James 5 and verse 14. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. Yes, the true elders of God are to pray over people, anointing them with a little olive oil as a symbol of the Holy Spirit. And God says, verse 15, and the prayer of faith. Now, many times people don't have faith in our faithless society, our consumer-oriented society, our scientific society, and the prayer of faith will save the sick. And the Lord will raise him up, and if he's committed sins, he will be forgiven. Often sin is involved in sickness when you start breaking God's laws, even God's physical laws, so to speak. So we need to understand, God promises healing. I knew a lady years ago, and many, many dozens, in fact, a few hundred other people knew about this. It was not done in a corner. She had a terrible situation in her physical body. She had cancer in one breast. She began attending the True Church of God, finally, after it got worse, but the cancer had to be removed, and the whole breast was removed, as I remember. But the cancer then spread, and it spread to the other breast. Then she began to attend regularly and began to put her trust in God. But the cancer in the other breast got worse and worse and worse, and she was in horrible pain. And she'd asked the minister to anoint her, which he did, and after some time, she began to cry and scream. The pain got so absolutely excruciating that a whole team of ladies were helping her so her husband could do his job and support her. And they took care of her day and night and had to change, of course, her sheets because she was perspiring and writhing in bed and so on. And finally, one evening, they called the minister, said she wants you to come over one more time and pray for her and pray that God will either kill her right now, let her die, or heal her right now. She can't stand it. And he came over and prayed fervently. One of the most fervent prayers he'd ever prayed, he told me himself. And finally, after that prayer, she still seemed to be shaking and crying. But after about 40, 60, 80 seconds, they said it seemed like a long time, but she stopped all of a sudden, and she said, it's gone. It's gone. And they looked at each other, and some of the women began to cry. And over the next weeks and months, the body sloughed off dead tissue, and it was gone. And I flew over to that city where she lived and talked to her and all the ladies around her who were gathered around her after church. And I said, did you help take care of her? Did you know about her condition? Yes, they did. She was healed supernaturally by the great God who promises healing and who intervened. Again, I knew a lady way back in 1952. Who had come to be counseled by a young man and me on what we called then a baptizing tour. These were not people that were trying to talk into being baptized, but people who wanted to be baptized properly by immersion across the United States and had listened to our message, read our articles in the magazine, and wanted to come to God and give their lives to God. This lady brought a Protestant friend along with her from another church, who had grown up with her and known her all her life. And of course, after we had counseled her, after we had baptized her and were ready to leave, this woman, who was not some emotional person, it was not based on hoop and holler type stuff, frankly, at all, very thoughtful farm woman, she said, "Fellas, before you leave, I want to tell you something." And she held out her arms, and it was summertime, and so she was wearing a short-sleeved dress, short-sleeved blouse, and she said, "From the time I was born, this arm, whichever one it was, I think it was the right arm, was withered. It just hang about one-third or one-fourth the size of a normal arm, and it was just like a rope. And, you know, it couldn't do anything. It just hung there, limp, like a rope, very small." She said, "I asked for prayer and anointed cloth from God's minister this past winter, a minister that I was working with very much, a very wonderful man at that time. And he sent out anointed cloths as a symbol of God's working, God's spirit." And we do that from this program too, by the way, if any of you want to respond and talk about that, ask about that. And she said, soon after that cloth arrived, this arm began to grow right out. And I was amazed myself. She said it grew right out. And she said, "Fellas, look," she said, "this arm is still not as big as the other arm." She said, "I realize God healed the arm, but he's letting me, she said, do the work of building the muscles so the arms will be the same size over time." And I thought that was wonderful. And I was a young, tough guy. I'd won a Golden Gloves boxing championship in high school and played football and so on. And I normally didn't have tears come to my eyes, but I did there. This was not some emotional thing in that sense. This woman just calmly telling us what happened. And I turned to her friend, who was from another faith altogether, and said, "Did you see her and you saw this happen?" And she nodded, "Yes, I did." I think that's one reason that other woman was there. She saw that miracle. That woman calmly told us about it as we were about to leave, not to make us do anything for her, just to share what happened in her life. She held out her arms, and you could finally see when you looked at it that the other arm, which had always been normal, was a little larger. But the muscle in the other arm the muscles were beginning to strengthen. She said, "Now I can milk with both hands," she said, "and God is letting me build the muscles in both arms." That was wonderful. I'll never forget that. Only a real God could supernaturally intervene and heal these dear ladies as he did. And there are many, many more examples I could tell you about. But that is another reason why I believe in a real God. The God that intervenes in human affairs to bring about prophecy. The God that heals. The God that created your mind. The God that created the heavens and the earth and everything that in them is. So you need to think about the five reasons why we should know there is a real God. And I hope that you will, my friends. The God of creation is alive and that God is living and moving. I want all of you to understand that. God tells us in His Word back here in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1, "Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." Now, you don't see God, but you can come to know that He exists by all these other things and these five reasons I have given you on this program. And it can turn your life around if you come to know this real God and really come to love Him and know Him and serve Him and pray to Him as your Father in heaven, and your life will have tremendous meaning and purpose way beyond what it ever has before. Verse 6, "But without faith it is impossible to please Him," that is, to please God, "for he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him." Will you diligently seek that God? A lot of us diligently seek money. We seek fame, we seek success, we seek friends. Do we seek to know the God who gave us life and breath? Do we seek to learn His ways? Are we willing to take the truth to heart when we hear it on this program or anywhere else? Are we willing to drink into this word and feed upon it and believe what it says? Think about that. Do you diligently seek to understand and to accomplish the most important thing that you could possibly do in all your life? And that is to prove that there is a real God and to do the will of that God and to give your life to that God through the true Jesus Christ of the Bible Learn to do that, my friends. Learn to do that. Be willing to act on the information, the precious information we give you on this program. And tune in every week to Tomorrow's World program. On this program, you'll gain precious information, and you'll gain insights about prophecy, about the whole purpose of life that you'll gain nowhere else. Richard Ames, John O'Gwen, and I will give you understanding of current events and of the exciting prophecies of tomorrow's world and of the reason for being. See you right here next week.